How to do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. Today is Wednesday. This is the 14th of October. This is 2020. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Good to be here.
You rolled in Monday to sit in on the show and just won't leave, right?
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, I'm glad your chair is comfy. In the chair next to you today at a reasonable distance, of course, I have John Martellaro. Hi, John.
On the other side of the plexiglass shield is John. Good morning, Kelly. Good morning, Andrew.
So, John, I'd actually like to talk to you about your latest crush. So we've discovered Andrew's new girlfriend is the iPhone 12 Pro yesterday. But you had fallen in love with a different piece of all of this.
Yeah, I was taking the big picture view. I was looking at the overall event yesterday, and I was pleasantly surprised by the quality of the event. I didn't feel that way during the Apple Watch event in September because it wasn't so visual. I mean, the Apple Watch 6 is cool, but the product of an Apple Watch is, you know, you look at the face and do things. The product of an iPhone 12 is all the glorious things it can do with photos, and boy, did we see photos and videos.
Boy, howdy.
And it took my breath away, and I started thinking about the technology. I started thinking about the way there's no audience interaction, so it moves smoothly. I was thinking about the production values. Well, there was talking heads, and there was keynote slides. Mm-hmm. But it was woven together into such a visual extravaganza that the whole was more than the sum of the parts, including some aluminum briefcases with James Bond music.
There was about 5 minutes of yesterday's event that Mr. Kelly was interested in, and it was, what are the new phones like? I made him start at the beginning with, this is what I want you to get me for my birthday, with the HomePod Mini. And then I showed him the rest, and then I went, okay, but wait, there's a part you need to see after this. And I showed him that bit because he's a big James Bond fan, too. And he did chuckle. I will give him that. For people who are interested in seeing the event, if you didn't see it yesterday, if you just want to sort of skip to the highlights, if you look at it in the TV app, and I know this because I did it last night to show Mr. Kelly what was going on, it's got bookmarks in it for here's where the HomePod Mini comes in, here's where the iPhone 12 comes in, here's where the 12 Pro comes in. So if you just want to skip to one of those sort of chapters and just see that part, you can skip ahead. You don't have to like bounce around and go, oh, they're talking about the Pro, I have to back up, you know, or anything like that. So it's very handy.
What's cool about this event is I don't think it would have happened if it hadn't been for the pandemic.
Sure.
Because it forced Apple into a new kind of presentation mode. Clean, very, very visual, very smooth, very exciting.
Can we talk for a minute about
the pressure?
The augmented reality piece when the 12 showed up on stage, the 12 Pro showed up on stage with Tim Cook. I thought that was very nifty.
It was amazing.
It was just cool. It was a really nice, you know, special effect. One thing that sticks with me about these video presentations overall, John, I know you had another observation about, you know, it really only being an hour yesterday, is that one of the things that I notice is after we had the event last month, I appeared on Mac Voices with Chuck Joyner. Hi, Chuck. I know he's a regular listener. And I was on with Dr. Robert Carter, and he has the Tech Doctor podcast, and he's blind. And he was talking about how the audio behind these, the audio description, the closed captioning is much more solid than it used to be during the live events. And so because they can build all of that in ahead of time, like he gets to kind of have the same experience we all have where we're getting kind of all the same information at the same time. And there's not, you know, there's not other pieces of the live stuff, you know, that they have somebody like transcribing live or whatever. So building that all in ahead of time also makes it a more accessible event, which I think is pretty great. And it, you know, obviously I don't use any of those sorts of assistances. So it didn't occur to me that that wasn't a thing that was already happening. So I'm really glad to see that they've really upped their game on that front, you know, because it's just another piece of accessibility that they're doing a really good job with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. John, another thing that I think you noticed was the difference a lack of audience makes.
Yeah, we talked about that in the morning meeting, and Dave brought that up yesterday in his post-show gab. You don't have to pause for the audience to clap. Mm-hmm. You don't have to wonder about when to resume. You don't have to worry about the clapping stepping on your audio.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very nice, smooth, continuous, dazzling event that Apple can produce without an audience on hand. You know, sometimes an audience is helpful because if you have a sense of humor, you know, you can get the audience wound up and you can have Apple fanatics cheering about Apple silicon or iPhone 12 cameras. And, you know, that can produce some very good energy. But what substitutes for that is the professionalism and the production values and the continuous flow of the presentation. Yeah, it went 67 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like there have been events in the past that kind of droned on.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there was probably time to introduce some other products, which Apple elected not to do, and we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
But this was an exceptionally visual, exciting, crisp event that had you excited about what the iPhone 12 could do for you as an amateur or as a professional.
Yeah.
I mean, the presentation of the product and the presentation of what it could do had me very excited about people, you know, lusting after buying this product, and I think the sales are going to be really good. I saw a tweet yesterday that said that because of the pandemic, Apple can't expect the sales to be as good. But I don't believe that. I think the worldwide sales of the phone are going to be awfully good.
Well, and I mean, aside from the economy of it, right? The price hasn't changed, so that will help for people who have been waiting. I think the regularity of the upgrade cycle has also worked in their favor. We kind of get them every September, October, right? So, you know, like somebody like, oh, I don't know, Andrew, for example, knew that we were going to get new iPhones about this time this year and, you know, started putting pennies in a jar, so to speak, because you knew it was coming and you knew you were going to want one. And, you know, like, I think part of the regularity of it helps. And, you know, Apple used to be unpredictable. I mean, the first iPhone was announced in January, didn't ship till June. And, you know, they were sort of summery events until they settled on this like September, this time, October timeframe. So I think it's interesting. And but I do believe a little bit in the super cycle people are talking about. Like, not everybody's buying a new phone every year or every two. And I think there are a lot of people who have maybe a 10 like, I know Mr. Kelly's still sticking with his 10. He's like, I don't need any more phone than I have now. And I think he doesn't feel like he's necessarily gotten his money's worth out of it yet because it was the first four-digit priced phone, you know, available, and he ended up buying one. So I don't think he feels like he's put enough miles on it yet. And I think that that trend is going to continue. So, you know, making a leap like this is going to get a lot of iPhone 8 people, maybe some iPhone 10 people, your 6 and your 7, your 6, 6S, 7 people. I think those are the people that are going to come to this one. So I think it'll be...
That's a pretty steady phenomena. Yeah. Apple can pretty much count on that when people get a phone. I mean, people look into the statistics of that, and they've been tracking the average upgrade cycle.
Yeah.
It's drifted up from, you know, 24 months to 30 months.
Mm-hmm.
So the industry knows pretty well about what people's habits are. And when your phone gets to be 3 years old, you're ready to upgrade, maybe because the screen is scratched or a little bit, or you just want the new technology.
Yeah. So, John, what do we call the opposite of Moore's Law?
The opposite of Moore's Law?
Yeah, where speed doubles,
where mechanics.
Price doubles, you know, because it was speed doubles and price doubles every 6 months or whatever it was. And now, you know, speed doubles and price doubles, you know, so people upgrade every 36 months, you know, or whatever it is. So I don't know. I'm trying to make a joke and it fell over. I'm sorry.
Kelly's Law.
Yeah, there you go. That's what it is.
Well, 5-nanometer process in the A14 is really pushing the limits of quantum mechanics.
Well,
we'll find out. Links.
Well, I think both of you are going to push the limits of quantum mechanics because both of you are getting one or the other at some point. I think Andrew's getting a pro and John, you're getting a pro max.
Yep.
Yeah. So
I have a 10. I have a 10. 10S.
Tennis match. Yep.
Tennis max. And it's, yeah, it's getting old. My wife has an iPhone 10 that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And she's ready for a new phone because that was bought in September 17. 3 years is long enough to go without a new phone.
Yeah, I think part of it is just that the difference isn't quite as fundamental because in earlier iterations, you know, we got a lot of stuff like Touch ID was a thing a lot of people upgraded for. And then Apple Pay was a thing a lot of people upgraded for. And now for some people, you know, like Andrew, this is going to be the first Face ID phone for them. So yeah. I haven't, you know, aside from the physical appearance, I don't see a dramatic addition to this that people are going to really notice, mostly because I haven't seen a load of things that are like, yeah, you know, if you just had LiDAR in your phone, this would be awesome. And we're only just getting that with this phone. And even then, you know, it's kind of iffy. So we'll see. The event was great. We've talked loads about it. But one thing we want to talk about for a moment is something we did not see there, which is the Apple TV. And yet we still managed to get a little bit of Apple TV news. Right, Andrew?
Yes. So today, Sony announced that they are bringing the Apple TV app to certain models of their smart TVs. So they say today their line of X900H TVs will be getting the app with the software update. And then over time, certain 2018 models and most 2019 and 2020 models will be getting it.
Nice. That'll, so, and yeah, again,
it's nice to see the Apple's app spreading to other platforms like that.
Yeah.
It's like a virus.
John, 2020 is not one to make that joke. Read the room. one of the interesting things about this is, as we talked about, like the TV app being very pervasive, I guess. Like you can find it on loads of different hardware. You can find all kinds of different things that will carry it, like a Roku box will have it. Dave had mentioned on a previous episode about a TV that he got that has AirPlay technology and the TV app. So, you know, what do you need the Apple TV box for? And Andrew,
well, I think that's a mistake to assume that because Apple is trying to percolate the Apple TV app through as many hardware devices as possible, that we no longer need an Apple TV 4K hardware.
Well,
I think that's jumping to a conclusion that's unwarranted.
Well, no, but in certain cases, there may be a compelling argument for it. Now, Andrew, I want to ask you about this specifically because you wrote a piece after we kind of chatted about the Apple TV on Monday. You wrote a piece about, like, if Apple really wants to upgrade the Apple TV or update the Apple TV, what sorts of things they could do that would make that worth picking up.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, to credit where credit is due, I'm the one that wrote this, but all three of us sort of talked about it and hashed it out the other day.
We did.
And we were all trying to figure out what's going on with the Apple TV and where is it going next? Because it's a TV. It definitely doesn't need an update every year like right. The iPhone. But the last time it was updated, as John noted, was 2017.
Yeah.
So 3 years later, it's probably around the time where we could be seeing it soon. And according to rumors, maybe we could see it later this year or early next year. We're not really sure on that yet.
Yeah.
But my idea was, well, maybe Apple could focus more on gaming with the TV.
Yeah.
And I did mention in my piece that in 2018, there was this Apple patent that surfaced, and it was talking about an Apple TV gaming system. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of like thought that out a bit more. And I thought, well, if they do that, maybe they can also release some gaming accessories. You can use some third-party controllers with the Apple TV and also iPhones and iPads, but I think maybe Apple should release their own controller.
Yeah. I have wondered about that myself more than once. What it would be like if I could just get and if I could get a controller from Apple instead of having to try to find a third party something that was comfortable, that was, you know, easy to use, whatever. I've considered that. And I will tell you, after we had this conversation the other day, a friend of mine texted me and said, I really like where Andrew's headed, but I have no faith in Apple's leadership to actually do it.
So, can I offer an alternative opinion here?
No.
Oh, yeah.
So one of the things that I've noticed about Apple is that they tend to delay a product because their strategy has shifted. You know, the Apple TV was originally designed by Apple video people for video presentation. Mm-hmm. And while you can have the Apple TV app on smart TVs, there's things you can do on a platform. And so the Apple TV guys say, well, what are we going to do next? And they have a meeting and they say, well, you know, it's got Dolby Vision, it's got HDR10, it's got HLG, it's got Dolby Atmos. What are we going to do? And somebody else in the meeting says, well, you know, we've been truly trying to figure out a way to amp up the games, and we got arcade coming and we got Apple One bundle coming. Why don't we think about upgrading the Apple TV to support some of our other initiatives other than just Apple TV Plus? Mm-hmm. And so that's why you got picture in picture. That's why you got rumors of integration with the fitness app and so on. So I think it's been changed at a mid-course correction, actually. And that's why we didn't see it actually ship. Because somebody said, whoa, we've got bigger strategic initiatives here. We want to fold into this product. And that's my guess.
Okay. Well, I think part of the issue with upgrading it is that, like, as far as a device that you hook up to the TV, there's not really a place for it to go, right? Like, who's going to need an 8K Apple TV? You know, Nobody right now.
Nobody.
And, you know, there it's not like resolution in other ways is doing anything interesting. It's not like it's not like there's some other sort of, you know, feature of watching something on a great big flat screen television that Apple didn't have and now, you know, wants to get into. So that's the part that I wonder about is, you know, they probably aren't finding anything to make it upgradable. But Andrew, I like your idea of gaming, of like taking it somewhere with third party controllers, because we didn't really talk about that.
With refresh Apple, is a factor. The current Apple TV 4K is 60 hertz along with the ATSC standard. But for streaming games, there's no limit on how many frames per second you can deliver. So why not go to 120 or 240 hertz for fast action, cool arcade games?
Well, and that would also show a little bit of...
You need an A13 or an A14 for that, not an A10.
Well, and it would show a little bit of support for Apple Arcade. Like, if you like these games, think how great it would be if they were on the TV, you know, and making that something that you could do easily. You know, that's one thing a lot of Nintendo Switch users, for example, tend to really like, is I can play on the TV if I'm home and in front of the TV. And if not, I can play it, you know, on the device I have with me, you know, because your Switch can do both. And I think if Apple were to offer that sort of thing, you know, maybe more people would be into, you know, $5 a month for something I can play on the TV when I want to, or just on my phone or my iPad the rest of the time. I think that would add a lot of value. And I think there's you know, that would also speak to the difference in the games that people have. Right. So, you know,
because
have some party games on there and stuff that people can play together cooperatively.
Yeah, and I did mention Apple Arcade in my article as well. I think we should see some improvements. Apple should be continually trying to improve it. The most common complaint I've heard about Apple Arcade is that, well, oh, it's all just, you know, indie games, and it's still more focused on maybe casual gamers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, maybe the arcade probably won't get, you know, a game like Skyrim or Call of Duty.
Sure.
But like you were just saying, there could be somewhere in the middle. I mean, it's gaming, so the sky's the limit, I think.
Right, and, you know,
I'd like to see Microsoft Flight Simulator.
casual gaming, though, like, I think there's a whole lot of values of casual gamer, right? Because I could be a casual gamer who really, really likes to play that game, and on my TV, I would play it even more. And I could still be a casual gamer. Like, you know, just because I don't spend, just because I'm not, like, an esports player, you know, doesn't mean, like, that I'm not actually enjoying games. And I think there's maybe more, like, sort of group games or even group co-op games that could get a real opportunity with an Apple TV. Somebody already has it. It does all these other things and now it plays games too. Like, the value proposition there would be amazing. So, I definitely like the idea of the game piece of it. We'll see how that goes. If you agree with us or don't, let us know at observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, or by leaving comments in the show notes. That's going to do it for us today. I will talk to all of you again tomorrow. Thanks so much for being here, Andrew.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
John, as always, thanks for coming by.
Nice to be here. Thanks.
I'm glad you both enjoyed it, because I think I'm going to try and talk both of you into being back again tomorrow. So we'll see how it goes. I'm your host, Kelly Gamano. I'll talk to all of you tomorrow. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.